Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Today, I want to talk about the particular mark of a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva, you know, is a practitioner who has gone right to the threshold of awakening, but not gone past through. Rather, she stops just before and comes back. I'll stop for just a second. Goes back to help others get through. And in Mahayana Buddhism, they talk about the Bodhisattva ideal, which is this ideal to turn around and help others. And I think it's kind of a corrective. The Bodhisattva ideal, I think, is what it was, kind of a corrective to what was perceived as an inward focus of the monastic community at the time. And so the whole Mahayana movement, I think, is in a way that attempts to make that kind of corrective. And so the Bodhisattva practices within a community, within a sangha, within this meditation hall, but then commits to traveling widely beyond it to help all sentient beings to connect with all of humankind. And the Bodhisattva cultivates six qualities, the six paramitas. All of them are included within our 12-month Dharma cycle. Generosity, virtue, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. And today I want to talk about what I think really may be the truest mark of a Bodhisattva, which is the first one, dana, generosity. And, so we need all of these other ones to follow the Zen path, but all of them, I think, have to be combined with this generous spirit. We can't be one who holds on tight to possessions or to spiritual attainment, either. And even to goodness and to peace. We have to do this practice with an open heart that's ready for the next thing and to meet the next moment generously. And I think the opposite of generosity is stinginess or greed. And I think the embodiment of that in the West, of that quality, is... there might be two. Ebenezer Scrooge and the Grinch. Both of which show up at Christmas. Today I'm only going to talk about one of those. I'm going to focus on Mr. Scrooge. In preparation, I read A Christmas Carol, which I had never read beginning to end. Anybody else read it? Beginning to end? Yeah. I thought it would be nice at home, you know. I tried to get Liam to agree. We could read it aloud. You know, with my children at my feet, gazing up.
And you wipe at your feet, too.
Well, probably, yeah. Or at least by my side, listening to my sonorous voice. And It didn't work. It didn't work. She didn't go for it. So instead, I decided to read to you. Because I had a captive audience. It only takes about an hour, 20 minutes. You have time. Marley was dead to begin with. That's how it begins. I'll give you the synopsis. Scrooge started an accounting firm. See, he was an accountant with Marley and Scrooge and Marley was the name of the firm. And here it is on Christmas Eve, and the scene is set, and everybody knows what Scrooge is like. He works very hard, and he keeps the coal box in his room and doles it out very carefully, to even to himself, but also to Bob Cratchit, his clerk. And Bob Cratchit's in the other room, and you know his embers have died, it's freezing cold, and he's warming himself by the candle. So Scrooge's nephew comes to call on him, invite him to dinner. Scrooge says he's just not interested in Christmas at all, as you know. He says, "Bah humbug." That's what he tells his nephew. Before that, he says, "Let every person keep Christmas in his own way, and let me mine." The nephew says, "You don't keep it. You don't keep Christmas." And after Scrooge says, "Bah humbug," he says, the nephew says, that he sees, so this is the nephew's view of Christmas. He sees Christmas as a good time, I'm quoting now, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in a long calendar year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they were really fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures. A lot of nice lines in this book. I think the Bodhisattva spirit knows something. It knows that we are all fellow travelers, or if it doesn't, it has to get to know that to be a Bodhisattva. It's not just about us, this practice. We have to get to know that we are all fellow travelers to the grave together. That we share that we will all share death, and that we all share suffering and share joy, and that we are more the same. And I think we have to look for that in this practice and realize it. That we are more the same than our outer appearance may show. And we also share something else that, according to the Zen tradition, which is this Buddha nature. The poet Ikkyu, I just talked about last year or earlier this year, he likes to represent that by drawing skeletons, doing all kinds of everyday activities. Having a good time, having a party, walking down the street. And that was his way of drawing attention to the fact that, of course, we all will share this death, but also that we all share this. We are all the same underneath all of our robes and everything else. We all are skeletons. And that was his way to strip it all down. So I think his point is the same, Ikkyu's, as Scrooge's nephew, that we are all fellow travelers to the grave, all part of the human race. So then, you know, a couple of people come to Scrooge that evening, this is Christmas Eve, to collecting for the poor. And Scrooge says, "It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. He's constantly involved with his own affairs. And aren't we all sometimes wrapped up in our own sphere? And of course, we have to take care of our own affairs. We have to concentrate on our own responsibilities. But this story, I think, and honestly, I think the Buddhist tradition also reminds us not to become prisoners of our own affairs, to regularly break out of that, to regularly remember that there are others, that there are other things to attend to. Well, that evening, Scrooge gets visited by his partner Marley has died, and he gets visited, of course, by Marley's ghost. Marley's ghost, I've forgotten this, was tied down, you know, by chains, of course, but within, there was also, besides chains, there were purses and lockboxes and ledgers kind of all wrapped up with these chains. He was tied up by money and by safes, by things that lock. Tied up by his own greed. And Scrooge, you know, first of all, just doesn't believe this is happening. And Marley just keeps talking to him, and finally he says, "Do you believe me now? It's me." And Scrooge says, "I do. I must." But he says, and this is so interesting to me, "Why do spirits walk the earth? And why do they come to me? It is required of every man," the ghost returned, "that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world, oh, woe is me, and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turned to happiness." So, it is the duty of every person to travel in life, to travel and spread some glimmer of joy, spread themselves. And if they don't do it in their life, then they're condemned to do it in death and travel. The sad thing is, I don't have the quote from it, but what Marley realizes is he's looking down on situations and difficulties that he cannot change as a ghost, that he wishes he could have. He wishes he could have his life back so he could. But he can change Scrooge's mind. So Scrooge says, you are fettered, tell me why. Marley says, "I wear the chains I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you?" We make our chains willingly. And I think, in a way, by following our desires, by what we think of as freedom and happiness, we sometimes have a way of chaining ourselves up. And in Zen, we go even deeper and say the chains, we are chained ourselves by our ideas, not only by our desires, but by our very thoughts and schemes. Scrooge says, "But you were always a good man of business, Jacob." "Business," cried the ghost. wringing his hands. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence. They were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Marley says he didn't realize it, but his business was much wider than he thought. This is a bodhisattva sentiment, that our business is much wider than our own business. We have to remember this in this tradition, perhaps especially, or in this business anyway, in of Zen, because we turn inward. We do. That's part of our path, is to understand ourselves. I would argue that Scrooge himself had to turn inward before he turned outward. But we have to remember that it's, and this is the, again, this is the bodhisattva, this is the reason for bodhisattvas, I think, existence, is to remind us that we not only have to turn inward, but we also have to go out and realize that our business lies with it, also outside ourselves. So then Marley says, you know, go to sleep, and you're going to get visited three nights in a row. And first one to come is the Ghost of Christmas Past, and this shows Scrooge as a lonely boy. He shows Scrooge, you know, as a kid, lonely, and Scrooge really opens up to that memory and remembers it and cries. He weeps, seeing himself as a kid, lonely there. And it really softens his heart. I think it's a kind of turning point for him. And he tells the ghost he wish he'd given that boy who came and sang a carol outside his door or something instead of scaring him off. He remembers his own sadness, his own loneliness, and identifies it with a loneliness, the sadness of that boy who came. He's starting to soften. And then he exclaims as he sees some of his old sort of some happiness in his life of old. This fellow Fezziwig, who he Dickens has his great names, who he apprenticed under. And Fezziwig is this jolly guy and he's having this grand Christmas party. And the spirit sometimes does this. He takes Scrooge's position, and then Scrooge is like, wait a minute, that's not right. And there's this subtle point in here, I think, that also is relevant to our practice. The spirit signed to him to listen to the two apprentices who were pouring their hearts out in praise of Fezziwig. And when he does so, he says, why? The spirit says, he's only spent a few pounds of mortal money, three or four perhaps. Does he deserve this much praise? And Scrooge says, no, that isn't so. Heated by the remark, and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter self. It isn't that spirit. He has the power to render us happy and unhappy. He to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. That's a point that I often reflect upon as a Buddhist, that the most important change, I think, that we make in the world are these subtle, slight things that, well, what I want to say is that the most important change is our own heart, and that spills out in small ways, not necessarily large, every day, every hour of every day, and that that's the real change that we have to make, rather than some grand move, that it's the change within, and that then makes these make small changes that last a lifetime. So Scrooge is turning inward now, and it says he can see himself. I'm sorry. Scrooge is now the ghost of Christmas Path shows him, you know, how he turns little by little greedier and greedier. Says there was an eager, greedy, restless motion in Scrooge's eye, which showed the passion that had taken root, and where the shadow of the growing tree would fall. I thought that was a nice way to put it. Thich Nhat Hanh says we have seeds of we have different sorts of seeds within us, seeds of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, and if we can become conscious enough, we can decide to water one or another and grow, you know, one kind of tree or another kind of tree. And then his love, Scrooge's love, says, his, you know, his great love who leaves him, says, "You fear the world too much," she answered gently. "All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion, gain, engrossed you, have I not?" In Zen we say, stop gaining ideas. So then the ghost of the present comes. I'm just going to take a moment for the present and the future, not so much time. Shows him Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim, his charge, his very humble surroundings, but they have love. They have a kind of joy that surprises him, even though they don't have much money. Moving right along, I'll just mention this and I'll drop it. I won't go into it much because I don't have much time, but the Christmas present raises up his, after showing him lots of things that are going on at Christmas right now, he raises up his skirt, and underneath are a boy and a girl that are thin and wan and almost grotesque. And one of them is ignorance, and the other is want. And the boy is ignorance, and the girl is want. And so those are the two things that he has to. These are the two things that have to be corrected. It's interesting to me to think: is it the ignorance of the children, or is it the ignorance? I've read a couple of commentaries. You know, most say it's Scrooge's willful ignorance of the world that has to be combated. But I also wonder whether it's his own. I'll leave that with you. Then the ghost of future comes, and by the time the ghost of future comes, Scrooge knows that he has to go through this process. He wants the future now. He's completely changed in this regard. He wants the future to show him around and teach him something. He says, "I fear you more than any specter I've seen, but as I know your purpose is to do me good, And as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? That specter does not speak to him at all. Never says a word. Just points. And of course, and as my daughter said when I, you know, she always helps me with these talks. She says, Scrooge is willing to take criticism. You know, that was something that was a real plus for Scrooge. At this point, he was. And of course, he overhears people talking about this guy who's died and how nobody's going to miss him, and they divide up his belongings and finally points to the grave. Who is this? Scrooge says. Points to the grave, and of course, it's Ebenezer Scrooge, overgrown and forgotten. And then he goes to church. He wakes up, finally, and then says, oh, my God. He thought it had been 3 nights, but it had only been that 1 night. And so it's Christmas morning. He walks about the streets, watching people hurry to and fro, patted children on the head. You know, this is the happy ending. Questioned beggars, looked out into the kitchens of houses. He's going about town now, and broken out of his shell. And found that everything could yield him pleasure. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he turned his steps toward his nephew's house. Sounds like he's just done a retreat. I don't actually mean to suggest that Christmas Carol is his end story. But I do think that it illustrates nicely this one very important bodhisattva trait of generosity. And it's one that we need for this path. I don't think it's a Christian story either, by the way. That's hardly mentioned at all in this story. It's really a human story. Mm-hmm. A kind of myth. Scrooge needed his cage rattled big time in order to break out of his shell or out of his prison. And took these three ghosts from his past, his present, and his future to do the trick. We have a practice also, one that shakes us up. For us, it's actually about losing the past and the future and finding something in the present that is wholesome and pure and opening. And I think that opening allows for a kind of change of heart in us. But it doesn't guarantee it. And the Bodhisattva path requires us to do this inward practice, to go through this kind of difficult opening practice, and then to step out into the streets and to mix it up with our fellow humans of all types and to regard them in some different way than we normally would.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.